This is Spreaker Web Radio.
California. This is PRT Paranormal Talk. And now, your host, Paranormal Bill.
Thank you, and good evening, good morning, wherever you may be listening to the show tonight. Tonight, we are joined by my very special guest, Daniel Johnson, as we talk, get his take on the paranormal as seen through a Mormon or, as they like to be called, the Latter-day Saints perspective. Latter-day Saints. We'll get his perspective on the paranormal. Welcome to the show, Daniel.
Well, thank you. I appreciate being here.
So, let's get into a little bit about you first before we get into the your take on the paranormal.
Okay. So, what I'm all about?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Well, there's not a whole lot special about me. I live currently in California, and excuse me, I'm actually I'm an artist and a teacher, an author. So that's what I mainly do during the day, and I've always been really interested in what you might call paranormal themes. I was a child of the 70s. I remember things like In Search Of, and remember there was a movie, In Search Of Noah's Ark, and I loved watching In Search Of on TV, and there's a lot of talk about Eric von Däniken, Chariots of the Gods, and I was kind of raised in my home with that kind of atmosphere as far as, you know, wondering what all these unusual things were and trying to find an answer for them. So, you know, that was, you know, common talk around in my home growing up, and I've always been fascinated with these types of items. So, that's one of the reasons that I'm here. And one reason also is that I am a Mormon, and the church is actually not the Mormon Church. It's called the Church of Jesus Christ of Latter-day Saints. But, so I've been involved with the church for most of my life. I actually was a missionary many years ago in Argentina. And so I've spent a lot of time in situations where I've been able to teach either spiritual things or even just you know, purely technical things like the stuff that I do for work. Mm-hmm. And I enjoy teaching about stuff that I know and also about, you know, hearing other people's take and just you know, comparing ideas.
Yeah. So you just got basically an interest in the paranormal. You haven't actually gone out and done like me. I'm a paranormal investigator. I go out, search for the answer. Have you done any kind of work like that, or?
No, I haven't. I guess I would be sort of like an armchair investigator. I'm very interested about in just kind of the, I guess, the various movements that go on in things that affect people's thinking. I noticed there are a lot of paranormal shows on today, especially ghost hunting types of shows. So I don't really do any of that myself. I'd like to. It's haven't quite at the time yet. So my take on it doesn't come from any kind of practical point of view or kind of research point of view, but it's mainly it's just kind of a doctrinal point of view, you know, sharing what Mormon doctrine has to say about these things, just so you can really find that interesting.
Okay. So, what is, trying to think of how to word this, what is, like, the Mormons' take on ghosts, spirits, demonic activity, or that kind of activity.
Sure. That's kind of many questions there wrapped into one. Mm-hmm. So I have to kind of take them all individually. First of all, for me personally, and so what I'm going to talk about now, the majority of it is just you know, good old plain, you know, LDS Sunday school teachings. And a little bit of it is my take. But I personally don't really like the term ghost because it carries a lot of weight and connotation with it, and it makes me think too much of, like, you know, haunted houses or scary movies or, you know, that kind of thing. Mm-hmm. So I prefer the term spirit, which for me is a much more sort of neutral type of idea. Mm-hmm. And so that's kind of how I like to think about it. Now, in Mormon doctrine, we have a lot of very specific beliefs about what spirit is. So, for example, we believe that each of us has a spirit. And we also believe that our spirits are eternal. That means that it existed before we were born. We existed as spirit children of God. And that this mortality is a time when our spirits come and join with the physical body. And the combination of the physical body and the spirit is what we refer to as the soul. So for some people, use the words spirit and soul are kind of interchangeable. And so I kind of get that as well. Mm-hmm. But technically speaking, we look at the soul as being the spirit and the body together. So if we look at Genesis, when God created Adam, he created his body, breathed into him the breath of life, and Adam became a living soul. And the breath of life in Hebrew is ruach, which is often translated as spirit, and then you have the, you know, combination of that plus the body is the soul. And so that's kind of how we view that.
Okay.
And we believe that at death, our spirits separate from our body, obviously. The body stays on this physical earth, but the spirit continues living. And we believe, again, that the spirit is eternal and cannot die, and the consciousness exists. So that's kind of our view there, and that the spirit continues existing, and that at some future time, we will be resurrected through the salvation of Jesus Christ. We will, in that the spirit and the body will reunite together and be in their perfect form. And so we believe in a physical resurrection through the grace of Christ, that every person born upon this earth will be resurrected. Mm-hmm. So that's kind of our idea of spirit. And we look at it as being an infinite type of existence.
Okay. So, what about the darker side of things?
The darker side. We believe there are evil spirits. And we believe that the chief among those would be a spirit whose name is Lucifer. We commonly refer to him as the devil or Satan. And Satan is really a Hebrew word that means adversary. So we think of him as the adversary of humanity. And in fact, he is. His job and those spirits with him, their job is to try and sort of pull us down and to make our lives difficult and to get us to go away from the path that we should be on. And we believe that that the devil and those spirits with him, that they are spirits in the same way that we have a spirit, and that they are also children of God as we are, but yet at some distant point in the past, they rebelled against God and were cast out. And they came to this earth, and they took it upon themselves to kind of be the thorn in our side, so to speak, in our mortal existence. Mm-hmm. One major difference between what we would consider ourselves and then the evil side is that Lucifer and his followers, we believe, will never have a physical body. So they will never be born, and they will never have that, and that in some cases is the cause of their enmity with us. We believe that having a physical body is a great gift of God, and that we can do many wonderful things in our physical body. And so that is one major difference. And so Satan and his followers have taken it upon themselves to kind of try and fight against God's plan destroy us or tempt us away from what we should be doing in mortality.
Okay, now, I saw a story a while back, and I mentioned it on my show, that, like, when we're born, we're pure souls, but also, like, I think it was a study that said 30% were considered white souls and 70% were dark souls. What's your thoughts on something like that?
Are you talking about people who were born?
Yeah, when we're born, how we're pure souls when we're born,
mm-hmm.
and everything like that. But the study also said that 30% were born white souls or the good souls, and then 70% born dark souls, but it doesn't come into our being until later on in life. What's your take on that?
Well, I'm not sure where that percentage would come from, but our take is that everyone who was born upon this earth made one correct decision. And we believe that we were all of us who are destined, who are God's children, spirit children, were together, and that this one spirit named Lucifer rebelled against God's plan and sort of fought against it. And so he and his followers were cast out of heaven, of this spiritual existence. We believe that was actually one third of God's children followed that. So that's a large number of spirits that are, you know, are enemies now. But we believe that all of us who are here, even the worst person upon this earth, made at least that correct decision to be on God's side at that early time. And that when we're born, we are pure. That all of us kind of start out, you know, with you know, a full range of opportunities on this earth. We actually believe that little children are pure before God until they reach an older age, that they're pure and not capable of evil actions until they are older and able to realize right from wrong. So,
I don't know about
a percentage. I would just say that all of us are born and we have the full range of choices before us.
Yeah, I think that's kind of where it was getting at, because I saw something in the story that showed that, Jeffrey Dahmer or something like that was in the story or something like that, where you might be sitting next to him at a dinner table and he might seem nice, but there's still that dark side of him.
And I'm not really sure how to explain that. And the truth is, you know, some of the more devious, most evil people, that's part of their evil, is that they seem so nice. I mean, look at Ted Bundy. I mean, he would seem to be a very, you know, nice guy, very nice looking and polite, and that's how he was able to, you know, convince so many women to their deaths. So we also believe that, you know, since we existed before this earth, that we made decisions and we progressed to a certain degree before our births. And so there is some type of personality that is eternal, that is there. So, but this idea of something about our being has always been around. And, you know, maybe something of that comes with us, you know, when we are born. But we do believe that children are born pure and innocent before God. And of course, you know, the most evil people on this earth were pure and innocent at one time when they were born. And then somewhere along the line, something happened. And was that destined to happen? Was it something that they were before they were born? Or did it happen, just something that came together in their lifetimes? Yeah, that I'm not sure.
Okay. Well, we're coming up on my first break of the night. So please stick with us, and we'll be right back after this short commercial break. You're listening to PRT Paranormal Talk.
I've never been superstitious. I've never feared the unknown. Ever since you left me,
PRT Paranormal Talk, your source for everything paranormal. PRT Paranormal Talk is now on Monday, Wednesday, and Friday nights here on Spreaker.com and on Euron.net. Check out www.prtparanormaltalk.weebly.com for upcoming shows and much more. Once again, that is www.prtparanormaltalk.weebly.com. Do you wonder what lies are coming out of our government? Do you want to know what the Bilderberg Group has planned for the world's population? Tired of the lies and misinformation coming from mainstream media about what's going on behind closed doors? Well, tune in to the Views Express Monday through Friday at 4 p.m. Pacific right here on Spreaker.com as Reverend Wayne S. Pierce gives you all the information they don't want you to know. Once again, that is the Views Express Monday through Friday at 4 p.m. Pacific right here on Spreaker.com. Okay, and we are back with my guest, Daniel Johnson. Now, I was talking to my guest during the break, and of course you all couldn't hear it because I had my mic muted. But we were talking about something and it brought up an interesting question. And going back on my past experience of kind of drifting to the dark side at one point in my life and then going towards the light, and everything like that. What's your take on souls that they'll do something like that? People that'll do something like that.
Well, we believe that every person here has his or her free agency, and that's the purpose of our mortal trial or probation is to be given choices and see what we will do with them, and see what we'll learn with that. And there is a dark force out there. As I mentioned, there is the adversary of mankind and all of the dark spirits who followed him, and they are trying to pull us off that path. And their goal, their ultimate goal, is to destroy us. Now, I don't think that's in some kind of you know, horror movie type of way, but probably more likely thing they're doing is they're trying to tempt us. They're trying to make it look, you know, the bad choices and evil choices, trying to make those look desirable, look like that's the better way to go, the easier way to go. Mm. I hate to make a reference to Star Wars, but I'm thinking of the dark side of the Force, which is, you know, quicker, yeah, and more tempting, but not stronger. And I think that there's some truth to that. So I think that's what they're really trying to do. In some ways, you know, it can be very subtle. But just from a Mormon point of view, our thought would be that it's really never too late to turn back. That God, whom we think of and call our Heavenly Father, our Father loves us all. And he may be saddened when we make wrong decisions, but he loves us all and would always want us to return. And that it really is never too late to try and make that change, to turn around. The problem is, the longer you wait, I think the harder it is to do that, harder to climb back up. But our message would be that it's never too late for anyone.
Yeah, almost like an addiction. It's hard to quit, but if you can do it, it's basically, you get the idea, basically. And while I was trying, I was having a brain freeze there. Couldn't think of what I was going to say, but you kind of get the point. So let's get on to some other aspects of the paranormal, because the paranormal covers a wide variety of things. When people see ghost hunting shows, they think it's just ghosts and spirits and everything like that, but the
paranormal field covers a wide variety of things. So let's get into UFOs and and everything in alien life.
UFOs, that's a fascinating topic. I've been fascinated with that all my life. And I keep wondering, you know, what is it that people are experiencing? Because there's got to be something they're experiencing. I'm not sure what it is. And I've had a couple of experiences myself. There's some things that I saw as a young boy that are still hard to explain. But it would seem to me that for a long time, Christianity especially seemed really resistant to the idea. And so for a long time, this Christian idea was that, you know, the earth was the center of God's creation. That's all there was. It was so important, of course, that, you know, the sun had to go around the earth, right? You know, and that was the high point of God's creation. And you have Copernicus and Galileo saying, no, it doesn't work that way, and that, you know, the church at the time didn't like that. So when you get to the idea of would there be other worlds out there, could there be other people or beings on those worlds, it seemed like Christianity, at least for the longest time, didn't really have any concept of that and was kind of antagonistic towards that. Well, we have kind of a different take on that. Our view is that the earth we live on, it's not the first inhabited world ever. That Adam and Eve aren't the first people ever. They're just the first people on this earth that pertain to us. Mm-hmm. And teaching that we've had since the days of Joseph Smith, and he would be the prophet that founded this religion, or restored it, as we look at in the early 18th century, his teaching was that there were other worlds out there, and that there were other creations of God and other people on these worlds. And so that was kind of this major thought. And so our take of things is a very universal take. We don't look at this earth as being, you know, that's it, but as being one point in this great, huge creation of God, which is full of other planets and full of other people. And we also look at the idea of the grace of Christ applies not just to this world, but to all of God's creation. Mm-hmm. And so that's an idea that we've had for quite a while. Now, in recent years, the Vatican has made some statements, you know, accepting this possibility, but it's a teaching that we've had for about over 150 years. Yeah. So we don't have any specific teachings on what UFOs are, but we do have an idea that it's certainly possible, because we believe that there are other worlds out there, and there are other creations on them, and some of them could have been around for a lot longer than we have. We look at things from a very kind of sort of infinite point of view. So they could be more advanced than us. They could be coming here to visit us. So, you know, we don't really have much more than that, but I'm saying the whole idea really fits within our theology.
Yeah. Now, Dr. Michio Kaku, I don't know if you're familiar with his work.
Yes, I've listened to him a lot on radio shows. He was a popular guest on Coast to Coast, and I've seen him on TV shows.
Now, he's talked about parallel universes and the possibility of these coming from these parallel universes. What would be your take on something like that?
Well, for me, that's kind of a scientific type of study. Mm-hmm. So I think it's a fascinating thing. So I guess we're pretty open to that. Nothing really specific, but you know, that could somehow fit into how the things of God work. You know, how you know, beings can travel. Getting back to the idea of spirits, we believe that when someone dies and the spirit separates from the body, that the spirits keep on living in a place we call the spirit world. And our teaching is that spirit world is actually here upon the earth. We can't really, you know, see it or interact with it. You could think about that as a parallel plane of existence.
Mm-hmm. I know we're always trying to find answers to that other realm of the spirit world and everything like that. But getting back to the UFOs and alien things, there's a lot of different race, or there's believed that there's a lot of different races out there, such as the Greys, the Reptilians, Anunnaki, and everything like that. And there are some that are believed that, of course, during the ancient Egyptian times and stuff like that, that these were actually gods, or they could have been the gods that were written about in the Bible and everything else. And what do you think about something like that?
Well, I don't know. As far as the Anunnaki and, you know, how the ancient cultures viewed things, I think there perhaps might be a lot we don't understand. I've heard the idea, of course, that we have these visitors from other worlds coming to ancient cultures, and the ancient cultures who didn't understand them, you know, called them gods. Mm-hmm. And I'm not sure we need to make, you know, that much of a distinction. In the Old Testament, the Hebrew word for God is Elohim, and that actually is a plural word. And there seems to have a lot of meaning of that. And there seems to be the concept that mankind, that people, are Elohim, or could become Elohim. And so that's actually a belief of ours, is that our goal is to return to God, our Heavenly Father, and become like Him. And others have done this. So, you know, they come to our earth and they visit with us. You know, the Old Testament is full of accounts like that. Other ancient books and writings may be full of accounts like that as well. So I'm not sure I see the need to distinguish between, you know, aliens and gods. But, you know, we look at these as being, you know, real beings, real people, and that, you know, that is our goal someday, to understand and to have power and mastery over these things, and to be able to, you know, travel anywhere in the universe and to be able to assist in these things. So I'm not sure exactly, you know, what is going on. And when the Egyptians talk about their gods, is it completely made up? Is it symbolized something else? Were there beings visiting them? You know, I don't know, but I think there are a lot of possibilities that are still open.
Okay. Trying to get one more question in here before the break at the half. And I had the thought in my head and now I lost it. Because it had to do with, you talked about, that Adam and Eve were not the first, people basically. Do you think these alien beings or extraterrestrial beings could have been our ancestors, predecessors to this earth?
That's an interesting question. For us, our idea of creation is a bit different. The Christian world came up with, you know, many centuries ago, this idea of a creation out of nothing, the creatio ex nihilo. We don't believe that. We believe that spirit is eternal. We believe that matter is eternal. And so, it wasn't like before this earth there was nothing. There were all kinds of things. There were other beings, there were other people, there was matter that our earth was created out of. And we look at Adam and Eve as being our physical parents, our primal parents of our race on this earth. We look at them as being, you know, children of God as well. So, you know, there would be other children of God, other spirit children of God around, and we're not exactly sure, you know, how the creation happened or when it happened. Mm-hmm. So that kind of thing is like left to us to ponder. From our point of view, with our scriptures, we know a lot more about our spiritual existence and what happened at that time than the physical creation. So I think we're sort of left to trying to figure that out ourselves, a lot of it.
Okay, well, we're at a break at the half. We'll be right back with my guest, Daniel Johnson, as we Talk about the paranormal. You're listening to PRT Paranormal Talk. Do you have a talk radio show or any other type of radio show and would like to get great guests to talk about the subjects that you talk about? Well, go to RadioGuestList.com and sign up today, and you too can have great guests coming on your show like PRT Paranormal Talk.
Concerned about our rights and the laws that affect our country? You'd like to hear another's take on the issues that affect our everyday lives?
Do you have questions, looking for answers, or differing opinions?
Would you like an update and a discussion of some of the most important or craziest news of the week?
Do you enjoy a good laugh or a little silliness?
If so, come join us.
Diana.
And Wayne.
Grab Bag Potpourri.
Friday nights at 7 p.m. Pacific.
Here on Spreaker.com.
Alright, and we are back with my guest Daniel Johnson as we get his take on the paranormal. And we talked about in the first 15 minutes ghosts and spirits and all that kind of aspect. Then we got into UFOs and aliens. Now I want to get into cryptozoology and cryptid creatures such as Bigfoot, Loch Ness Monster, and everything like that. Now, I don't know if the Latter-day Saints or Mormon Church has any thoughts on that, but what's your take on such creatures?
Well, you're correct that our doctrine wouldn't really have any answer to that. I mean, it seems like something like this is more of a very physical type of thing. You know, these creatures, some people think of them as metaphysical, but most people look at them as being real flesh and blood creatures. So it is more of a scientific, zoological question. What's interesting is that there's one fairly well-known scientist and Bigfoot researcher, Jeff Meldrum, and he's interviewed a lot with these shows and did a lot of work and a lot of research and written a lot of books about it. He's, I believe, an expert in the evolution of bipedalism and things that have to do with that from the University of Idaho. I'm pretty sure that he actually is a Mormon, and so, you know, that all seems to work fine with him. And something as a side note I found out just kind of earlier this year was that in the television show Ghost Hunters, the two founding members of Tufts, one of those actually is a Mormon as well, that I had never known. But I think we're fairly open to those kinds of things. I'm fascinated with the idea of Bigfoot or Sasquatch. My girls are fairly young. They love watching Finding Bigfoot. And sure. I'd like to think such a thing is real. I have to say that I think the Patterson-Gimlin film is extremely convincing. I know a lot of people have their explanations for it, but I'd like to see someone duplicate it, and no one has yet to do that.
Yeah.
So, I'm still waiting for all the skeptics to duplicate it and say, look, here's how it was done, and you can make something just as convincing. And you say, no one's done that. So, I don't know. I'm fascinated by the question. I don't know what's really going on. If there is no such creature there, then what are people seeing and hearing and experiencing and all that? So, I don't know.
Yeah, no, I'm
really open, but I'm hopeful, I guess.
Yeah, there's been videos out there where they've made it look real, but comes out that later on that it was all faked, or like the two hunters that said that they had a Bigfoot or Sasquatch, I think it was in the Georgia region and everything like that, and turns out that it was a suit.
Fiasco.
Yeah, and that makes the whole sighting thing just feed to the skeptics and everything like that. But
exactly. The skeptics can look at that, and that sort of colors the whole phenomenon for them.
Yeah. Now,
in the case of, and of course you have to know the famous surgeon's photo of Loch Ness Monster, which to me was never that convincing. And then in more recent years, you know, the hoax was admitted. So, you know, things like that are always a bit disappointing.
Yeah, now, before we get into the Loch Ness Monster and everything, I want to get a little bit on the Bigfoot as far as a different take on it. Now, there are thoughts that these creatures are interdimensional, or they could be almost like an alien race as far as another soul coming from another dimension or parallel universe or something like that. And do you think that these creatures could be just another form of God's type creature that we just don't know about, or they could be coming from just another dimension or something like that?
You know, that's certainly possible. I'm not sure which answer is more plausible. I know about the interdimensional type of idea or the metaphysical idea of it. And then you have the reports where people say that sometimes there are UFO sightings, Bigfoot sightings, and there's a connection. I know that most serious Bigfoot researchers, they kind of discount that idea and really view it as a real flesh and blood creature that, you know, lives and dies and needs to eat and you know, it is somewhere here. And what's interesting, of course, is we have the theory, we don't know yet, but the, you know, we have the fossil, the Gigantopithecus, that, you know, that's a theory of what it could be. You know, a real flesh and blood creature that actually fits into the evolutionary line and, you know, makes some sense.
Okay. Now, getting away from Bigfoot, getting into, like, the Loch Ness Monster, you mentioned the Loch Ness Monster and everything like that, and that film, and there's been other people that have disputed that film, but there's also people that have seen this creature up on land, but no photos. I think they were like in the 30s or 40s, somewhere around there, that people saw this creature on land. And now, as far as a lot of our history books, before man there was dinosaurs, could these creatures been left over from that time, or what's your take on it?
Yeah, that's certainly possible. And I think the idea, the lure of finding a living dinosaur is just, it seems so exciting if it could be true. And of course, there are reports all around the globe every now and then of things that seem like that. I just don't know. It seems like Loch Ness would be a very unlikely place. It is a fairly recent lake in geological terms, and it's a specific area. So if something's living there, you know, there's kind of a limit to where it can go. Whereas if something's living in the ocean, it's pretty much unlimited. You know, who knows what could be, you know, lurking in the greatest depths of the ocean. With Loch Ness, it's it's kind of hard to say. I mean, I've read the accounts of people who have, and it hasn't been for a long, long time. It's been for you know, many, many decades. The people that said they've seen a creature on land. There's an old tale of, I can't remember which saint it was that rebuked the creature and went back in the lake. So, yeah, those tales are interesting. I'm just not sure what to make of them. But I don't think anyone has quite that same type of story these days.
Yeah, now, could they, because I know there's different creatures that the same sort as Loch Ness, such as Champ up in Lake Champlain.
And yeah, everything. And Ogopogo.
Yeah, but like that one, I think it connects, that lake connects to the ocean, and maybe there's some way for like an underwater cave for like the Loch Ness, but could these creatures be surviving in our oceans and just coming to the fresh lake for possibly food or something like that?
Yeah, it's not possible. I mean, I think it's a fascinating question, and there's not a whole lot I can say about it. You know, I love watching things and reading things about this, but other than that, I just don't know. Other than, you know, my take would be that if these things are real, they probably are, you know, real zoological creatures, real, you know, flesh and blood mortal creatures. And it's just kind of part of God's creation, but there's a lot of which we don't understand and haven't quite figured out yet.
Okay. Now, one last creature before we get into our break. And everything in the last bit of the show, like Native Americans, the Thunderbird is a big part of cryptozoology, but it's also part of Native American lore and folklore. What's your take on those type of creatures?
I don't know, and there's not a whole lot I can say about this particular topic, mainly because, you know, our religion doesn't really delve into that. It's a fascinating thing. You know, is it some kind of giant prehistoric bird? I know some type of pterosaur has been mentioned. You know, is it just symbolic? I don't know. Our religion has always had kind of a love and a fascination with Native Americans and Native American culture and beliefs. But, you know, what the Thunderbird might be, if it's a real creature, you know, I don't know. It seems like you don't hear much about it now. I've heard some stories from a long time ago. And there are people looking for very large birds. Maybe there aren't much, you know, larger birds than we've actually found, but I have to say on that one, and I'm just not sure. You know, fascinating thing, and of course there are a lot of interesting things, Native American legends, you know, the Sasquatch creatures as well figure in their left, yeah, their mythology and their beliefs.
Yeah.
So, yeah, I'm just not sure.
Okay, yeah, no, I read something a while back where, like, the albatross bird has a 15-foot wingspan, so maybe something like that could be their idea of a Thunderbird or something like that, and mixed with their lore.
You know, it could be, especially if you see it from far off, start to tell. I mean, birds, from what I've seen, have a surprisingly long wingspan, you know, that you wouldn't quite guess. So, you know, that they can be, you know, quite large and imposing.
Yeah, same with the condor and everything like that. They got a very large wingspan, and
exactly, and we're not used to seeing them close up with their wings spread out to see just how large they are usually.
Yeah. Well, we're getting into our last break of the night. So you are listening to PRT Paranormal Talk. We'll be back with my guest Daniel Johnson as we get into the Mayan calendar and end date. We'll be right back after the short message.
Thank you.
Do you love soul, funk, R&B, disco, all from the 70s, 80s, and 90s? Well, tune in to the Flashback Express with Johnny G right here on Spreaker.com as he plays all your favorite music from those decades. Once again, that is the Flashback Express with Johnny G right here on Spreaker.com.
You're listening to Spreaker Web Radio.
The countdown has begun.
Take it from the top.
Oh, yeah, I had every intention of staying away from Spreaker.
8, 7.
But I've experienced the sheer outpour of love.
6, 5.
And I can never turn my back on the 3 people that listen to my show.
4, 3.
Yeah, I'm coming back. And I'll tell you why.
2, 1, 0.
Because I'm Chris Topp, bitch.
The Chris Topp Program. The alternative to the garbage on Spreaker. You can either talk in the Chris Topp
Okay, and we are back with about 12 minutes left in the show. And I want to get into a little bit about the Mayan calendar and the end date. And what is your take on the end date and Mayan calendar?
Right, well, but my personal take is one that I look at what the experts and Mayan archaeologists people can actually, you know, read this stuff, say. And the Maya had a very interesting view of time and how it worked. For them, time was very cyclical. And for us, we look at time as being linear. For the ancient Maya, it was cyclical. And so things kept coming around and around again. And they have this very, very detailed calendar where it starts off with a day. And then in 20 days, that makes one period of time. And then you have, you know, 20 of those make another period of time. And so it kind of keeps going up until you have these, you know, many hundreds of years. But if you can imagine, like an odometer that goes from 0 to 9, so you have 10 spaces that kind of keep going. As one clicks over to 0, the next higher one goes up. It's the same way with the Mayan calendar. And so except they didn't do a 10-base system. Theirs was, for the most part, 20-base. So instead of, so each little cycle was like 0 to 19, not 0 to 9. Mm. And so as each one of those, you know, hit the 0, the next one would advance 1. And what's going to happen later on this year is that it's going to get reset. And imagine an odometer, when you get to like 100,000, it's going to go from like 9999 to 0000, right? Mm-hmm. And so that same type of concept is what's going to happen later on this year, and that the calendar resets, and, you know, it's a big event, but there's nothing that mystical about it, at least for the Maya themselves. It would be like, you know, the end of a millennium or something. Yeah. And they didn't look at it as being the end date, because their calendar has reset several times in their chronology. So for them, it resets and it keeps going. Okay. So there's no real end. It might be the end of an era. And they have these prophecies where every period of almost 20 years was supposed to, certain things are supposed to happen in that. But for them, it's definitely not an end. It's just the beginning of a new era, and then time keeps going on. So the all the ideas and the uproar about it have really come from, you know, non-Maya people who don't quite know what the calendar is all about.
Yeah, and like I said, I kind of believe it's going to be more of an awakening of the mind. But I agree with you on it being just keep going around in circles and just keep repeating itself. So,
and that's how the Maya saw it. It was very, very cyclical. And they have inscriptions where they would love to kind of calculate dates, you know, hundreds of thousands of years in the past or up towards the future. And they actually have dates where they refer to things happening, you know, past this 2012 date they were coming to. So they certainly never saw it as an end.
Yeah. Now, what's the church's take on the Mayan culture and this end date?
Nothing with the date itself. But our take on not necessarily the Maya, but the ancient Mesoamerica and the ancient culture of the Americas is an interesting one. People know that we're called Mormons. And we're called Mormons because in addition to the Bible, we have what we believe is a book of scripture called the Book of Mormon. We believe that it was written by prophets who lived anciently in the Americas. And it's a record of what happened there. So we're not exactly sure where they were, but our belief is that if you look closely enough at the ancient civilizations in the Americas, more than likely in Mesoamerica, so Guatemala, Mexico, those types of places, they might see little traces of what happened. And I've actually written a couple of books about that. I've studied these sites, I've journeyed down there, I've researched them, and to understand their history, as archaeologists see it, and found lots of little parallels with what things that are in the Book of Mormon say and what the archaeologists say really happened. So we do have a great interest in these ancient American cultures, and I think a great love of American cultures in general, Native North American and Central American and South American, because we believe that these people who are here, there are certain blessings that that they were promised. And so we have a great interest in the people and in their cultures.
Now, you mentioned the books. You want to let my listeners know a little bit about those books?
Certainly. I'm the principal author on two books. The first one is called An LDS Guide to Mesoamerica. And it's a really neat book, I think. I'm a graphic artist and also did all the design inside the book. So we have a lot of neat pictures in there of the places we went. And what we did was, there are a lot of Mormons that like to go down and tour these sites, and no one ever put together like a guidebook. So what my co-authors and I do is we put together basically a site-by-site guide of these various sites. And we have a lot of our experiences on how we got down there, how we got from place to place, and what happened, and what it's like to visit each of these sites. In Guatemala, it would be Tikal and Quirigua and places in Mexico like Yaxchilan and Palenque and just these main sites to visit, and also some kind of not very usual ones. What we have is a site-by-site guide, so each chapter is about a certain site and about how you get there and what it's like and what its archaeological background is. And we also have a section where we talk about here are things that are similar in those sites that are similar to what the Book of Mormon says. Just kind of a comparison. And the most recent book came out this year. It's an e-book. It's called An LDS Guide to the Yucatan. And it talks about, kind of chronicles our travels throughout the Yucatan Peninsula, visiting sites like Ekbalam, Chichen Itza, Uxmal, Kaba, Calakmul. Really neat sites there. And the same type of thing. So that one is actually an e-book only, currently. But, they're both available and gotten good reviews, and I love being able to be a part of it and do the research and try and put out something that would be meaningful to me and hopefully people would like.
Alright. You want to let my listeners know where they can pick up these books? Yeah.
Certainly. The Amazon.com is a great place to do it. I do know that our first book, LDS Guide to Mesoamerica, you can purchase it there as a physical book and also for Kindle Fire. And our LDS Guide to the Yucatan is also available for Kindle. on from Amazon.com, and the books can also be purchased from our publisher, and that's actually Cedar Fort, based in Utah. And the ebook, I think the best way to get that currently is if you buy it directly from our publisher, Cedar Fort, you get a PDF, and it keeps all the formatting and the great design and layout that went into it. It kind of got a little bit lost in the Kindle version. So our publisher is Cedar Fort, or Amazon.com, or really any place where you can buy books online.
Now, and I got your name linked up to the website and everything like that on the show's website, where people can check out the thing on the Mayans and everything like that. But do you want to mention that website real quick?
Certainly. I put up my own blog. It's called ldsguide.blogspot.com, and basically it talks about the types of things that I'm doing, lectures and things that I've given. It talks about the books. I've also got some excerpts from the books, and papers I've written you can download there as well. A lot of people have questions about the Book of Mormon. There are a lot of critics of it saying it's not true, and so I have some papers there that answer some of the main issues raised about it. And just kind of tells the types of things I'm doing. I'm actually scheduled to headline a cruise to Honduras and the Yucatan next year. And so the stuff I'm doing, places where I'm talking and speaking and things about the books. One thing I'd like to say is I think that even non-Mormons would find the books interesting, because a great deal of it is about our experiences and adventures in these lands and a guide to the sites, and it's really telling what's there. And in the Mormon aspect, we have Book-Mormon comparisons. It's not really something where you say this is exactly what happened and we know it. It's saying, well, here's some comparisons, here's some similarities, and you draw your own conclusions. So I think a lot of people would find the books interesting.
All right. Well, and, go ahead.
And you also kind of get just why these places are important to Mormons and kind of a Mormon take on these things.
All right. Well, I want to thank you for coming on. Fog in my throat. I want to thank you for coming on the show and everything like that. And it was definitely interesting to hear your take and the church's take on different things in the paranormal. So.
Well, I appreciate the opportunity. I love sharing these things, and I love, just hopefully dispelling any myths or misunderstandings, and the more we talk, the more we, can understand each other. I think that's a great thing, especially with these topics that are kind of mysterious to begin with.
Alright. Well, I want to thank my guest, Daniel Johnson, for coming on the show, and on Wednesday night, I don't have a guest yet. I might actually take the night off for that night, but keep an eye out on the show's website at prtparanormaltalk.weebly.com, and I'll post something by tomorrow whether I'm going to take the day off or on Wednesday or not. And until next time, I will see you on the dark side. Good night from PRT Paranormal Talk.
Dream.